Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Nice to have you here today. The Great Nor'easter is over, and we're all kind of looking at some pretty snow out there, all plowed out, etc., on a beautiful winter's day. Hey, thanks for being with us today. As you know, we are now part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. All educators are invited to join in. Anybody interested in education, it's all free for educators. The new issue of our magazine, Equity in Access, just went up on site a few days ago. All you have to do is go over to ace-ed.org, click through on the magazine cover icon, and enjoy the magazine. And all our podcasts are over there as well. You'll see the icon for that, too. Please go over, join with us, tell your friends, ace-ed.org. And today we got another lovely show with my good friend Peter Finch. He's back, Maria Vasquez, and Christy Dominguez, all from the great state of Washington, Bellingham School District and West Valley School District. We're going to talk about equity in early learning and how they're – and I mean early learning – all right, and how they're working with play and learn groups. And I just heard Peter clear his throat, so I'll say good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Great to be here again, and just really excited to share about the good things happening here in Washington State with play and learn.
Yeah, you got some good people lined up for me today, including yourself. Was that you who cleared your throat? Was that you?
I don't think so, but I'm here. I'm ready to go.
Well, you're ready to go, Maria. Maria, was that you?
No, but I can clear my throat.
Then by elimination, it had to be Christy. Christy, was that you?
It wasn't me either. I don't know.
That's pretty weird. There's no fourth person on here. Getting crazy. Okay. Anyway, hey, let me introduce everybody. Christy, you're the assistant superintendent in Bellingham School District. Where's Bellingham? Tell everybody about that. I'm an East Coaster.
Bellingham is about an hour and a half north of Seattle and about 35 minutes south of Canada.
Wow. Right, the border's closed, right?
Yeah. Yeah, bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer because I bet there's a lot of back and forth through there. You've been in Bellingham since 1994, really? Wow.
Yeah. Well, I came to go to college and I just never left.
Wow. Well, that's
beautiful. You should visit sometime. It's gorgeous.
Well, I've never been to Bellingham, but I've certainly been to Washington. And what college is up there? That's what I'm going to ask. What college?
Western Washington University. It's a Division II school.
Yeah, and I know of Western Washington. And it's funny, when you're from the East Coast, for some reason we think Western Washington is Eastern Washington and Eastern Washington is Western Washington. It, like, makes us crazy. Like, so we would say Spokane is in the West. Okay, it makes you crazy, living on this side, talking about that side. Okay, it's just, and I'm in Maine. Okay, and it's great. And how many kids go to Bellingham School District? Just describe it so everybody knows what you do every day.
Yeah, we have about 12,000 students, and currently right now we're just working hard like everyone else across the nation trying to figure out how to get kids back in school.
Yeah, are you hybrid now, or what's going on right now?
No, we actually have our preschool through second grade in class 4 days a week, full days. And then we have all our special programs for children who have, learning disabilities or have an IEP.
Yeah,
and then working to figure out the hybrid plan 3 through 12 possibly, but we're still in the midst of that. So
you sure are.
No, definitely.
You sure are, and I assume the rest of the kids beyond those that you described are at home getting schooled, right?
They are.
For you. Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yeah,
I hope that's working out really great. Hello, Maria. Welcome again.
Good morning. I am
How are
on
you?
The eastern
Where
side
are you?
Of Washington. I'm in Washington. I'm right dead center. I'm in Peter's neck of the woods, but we call ourselves Eastern Washington.
I didn't
right
know that. I thought you called yourself Central Washington. There you go. And it really mixes us up here on the East Coast. I speak for everybody when I say that. Okay, it's really nutty.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. Just crazy. We can't. those directions make us crazy because we just think the whole mess is west or east or whatever. I don't know. It's hard to figure out. Okay. West Valley Schools, by the way, Maria is the Associate Director for Early Learning at the Child Care Aware of Central Washington. That's in Yakima, okay, close to where Peter is, actually where Peter is. And, Christy, one other thing I wanted to mention with you, okay, you're on the Washington State Early Learning Advisory Council, which is part of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and you were the co-author of the Washington State Guide to Full-Day Kindergarten. That's pretty cool.
Thank you. My heart work is early learning.
Wow. Were you an early learning specialist before you became a superintendent?
Yeah, my very first job, I was a toddler teacher at Yakima Valley Community College.
There's the connection.
Yeah, I've been
the connection.
Wow. A long time.
Larry, I wanted to let you know that, you know, Christy's been over there in Bellingham for quite a while, but she's originally from the Yakima Valley. Christy, Maria, and I all went to the same high school. We're all Wapato Wolves.
Yes, we did.
Wolves are in the house.
You're all Wapato Wolves? Is that correct?
But they're young pups. They're young pups. They graduated later than
I. I know the girls are. It's you I'm concerned. You must have pumped a few grades to be in the same grade as them. Okay, that's what
they were with my younger sisters.
Right. That's great. I didn't know each other for so long. And look where you all wound up in education doing what
you
can.
Yeah, and
look
at Christy.
You know,
she's like our friend Eddie Manuzak from Michigan. There's very rare superintendents who were actually early learning teachers, but we're really blessed to have Christy in the mix and her recent promotion to assistant superintendent. That's really awesome.
It really and truly is, and that's a really cool aspect of what's happening these days. I'm glad that happened. And Eddie being even more unique, being a former male kindergarten teacher, which is very interesting. Okay, very, and of course he's now Dr. Eddie, and he's over in Dundee and schools in Michigan. Okay, great. So
it's funny that you mentioned that, Larry, because guess what? I didn't put it in the bio, but Christy's just about ready to finish up her doctorate at the University of Washington. She'll be done this spring.
But no reason to wait that long. If you just give me $500, I'll give you your doctorate this afternoon from the University of Larry, Christy.
Yeah, that would have been a great route. Great route.
Well, Maria, she deserves an honorary doctorate for all the great work that she's doing for kids in Central Washington. So maybe we can work something there, Larry.
And Peter, you have a doctorate, am I correct?
Yeah, mine was through Washington State University.
All right, I'm removing yours and giving yours to them.
Right, sounds good.
So it's now Dr. Vasquez, Dr. Dominguez, and good old Mr. Finch. What can I tell you? Okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
No problem. That is a nice ring to it.
It does, doesn't it? Dr. Dominguez, Dr. Vasquez, Mr. Finch. I like it, okay? You're a mean
good
one.
Thing Maria showed up.
I can say you're a mean one, Mr. Finch, right? There you go.
That's right.
Sorry about that, but I'll give you your doctorate from University of Larry so we can go for that. You guys are doing this. We're going to focus on this, and this is key. And, equity in early learning. All right. And when we talk about early learning, we're really talking about early learning. All right. Because we want the families engaged from the get-go. And a lot of the families that we're talking about, and you had a great way to describe this, okay? These are the people who are furthest from opportunity. People who are struggling, perhaps new to this country, they're poverty stricken, I'll say it that way, and they need education to work their way out of it. Their kids certainly do too. Okay, so this is really important in family engagement at the very, very beginning of kids. So you develop play and learn groups, and I don't know, Maria, why don't I talk to you first, and you can pass to whoever. Talk about what a play and learn group is, and put it into this perspective of equity and early learning. Maria Vasquez.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's really an amazing opportunity that was intended to serve, you know, like you said, those furthest from resources and those that were having the hardest go at life. We know that our school systems and our formal early learning or capacity to serve all children is just not there. So what we do know is with the number of children birth to five, 72% of them do not have a seat to sit in. Even when you have Head Start, ECAP, and, childcare. You know, once they get into the schooling system, you know, that's kind of their first opportunity to sit in formalized teaching and learning. And
wow.
So these play and learn groups wow. were designed and developed with that lack of opportunity to serve and reach kids in their primal learning and brain developing time in their life. Most brain development happens between the ages of 0 and 5. About 85% of their brain is developed by the time they hit kindergarten. And so missing that opportunity to give kids the best, you know, outcomes, you know, we had to do something. And so, you know, family, friend, and neighbors are who care for those kiddos, because there are not enough spots for them. And so what we were able to really, you know, keep in mind is FFN care is the most widely used and most ancient form of child care. It's been here before child care. And mm-hmm. creating spaces within neighborhoods, churches, these places where families are and
yeah.
are going and are conglomerating around education was really a no-brainer. And so what we were able to do is really think about you know, funding. There are no funding structures for things that are not formalized in education, for education. So families relied on each other to be the
mm-hmm.
educators. And, you know, parents are your first and foremost important educator for a child. And, you know, not all those parents are working. And so they, you know, they
That's right.
do what they can. And so, you know, having to get some guided support and development with your neighbor or your community to support a space that would pull it all together, that would kind of demonstrate, you know, development and demonstrate interaction and model, you know, appropriate behavior and integrate your community, was an opportunity that we were able to just test out over here in Washington for, you know, probably for the last, gosh, since 2006, I think, is when we began our first ones here in Washington and
mm-hmm.
over on Christie's side of the state. And here on the eastern side of Cascade, west side of Washington and east
yeah.
side of the Cascade, we divide by the Cascade Mountains. And so once you cross over, you're in my
yeah.
neck of the woods.
So,
and,
but,
you know,
go ahead. Continue talking. Go ahead, Maria.
Yeah, and what I was gonna really talk about was the opportunity to merge funding, very limited funding, starting with borrowed space and or shared donated space, donated toys, donated funds for children's books, you know, placing product in the hands of kids who otherwise wouldn't even touch it until they get to
yeah.
kindergarten.
Yeah.
You know, just really setting up learning domains within our educational system that we know matters most to children. So exposure, really bringing in into a small space for a small amount of time is a playgroup. We look different across, you know, every community because they are racially intentionally supported to support the communities in which those communities
sure.
represent.
Sure.
So when we talk about why a playgroup, that is the practice that families can, you know, can engage in to get ready to know what to do and how to be better educators. You know, language-rich environments, different types of ways to use homemade toys or turn,
sure.
you know, Tupperware dishes into bongo drums and toilet paper rolls into binoculars. I mean, it's just an opportunity to use and to just teach.
Yeah, but let me ask you, okay, this is something I don't understand. How involved, and I'll swing over to Christy on this one, one of the authors of the Washington State Guide for Full-Day Kindergarten. Are we trying to get people just get together and just get a sense of learning, or do we actually have, if I may, and you just said, you know, sometimes struggle to get materials, some sort of curriculum? Are these play and learn groups run or managed, however you want to say that, by professional educators, or is it just catch as catch can? That's what I don't understand.
And you know, Maria can, she can talk about this as well, but I can tell you from my perspective, you know, the teacher is the number one direct variable to student outcome. We, you know, we talk about that. We invest as educational systems in the professional development of teachers. We spend billions of dollars on it.
Yes, we do.
Yet what Maria said was key is that parent is the first teacher. Yet our structures are not set up. You want to talk about equity, the fact that we do not have any organized funding streams.
Exactly.
You know, aside, we do have state preschool here, and then we have National Head Start. But every state is trying to figure out how to fund Birth to Five. And Maria did a beautiful job of really pointing out those are critical years. But yet we don't call them out, and we don't fund the professional development of our parents. And so what we're trying to do here in Washington State is create a professional development structure to support parents who are the most and critical teacher in a child's life, so they know what to do and they're getting the support they need. They have a ton of questions, but they don't have always have someone come alongside them. So, you know, it depends. In Bellingham Public Schools, we run a few of them, and they come out of our family engagement team. So they're not certificated teachers, but they are professionals in the fact that they know how to engage families. I mean, in a lot of ways, they are training every teacher in our district about how to engage a family, how to have a conversation, free from bias or judgment. And so I would say, you know, it's a professional development structure for those families in a way that it supports them in, one, knowing what to do, getting their questions answered, but also helping them think through what are those skills that they're going to be asked to learn as they move along the continuum.
What are the skills the parents are going to learn, or the kids, or both?
The child's going to learn. And, you know, children learn through play.
Of course,
you know,
they do.
I laugh,
you know, the play
time
is incredibly important. It's incredibly important.
And we do it all the way through. You know, in Washington State, we have something called career and technical education, you know, robotics, aerospace engineer.
Sure.
That is play-based learning for a high school student. Well, in young children,
that
looks
like
blocks and Legos. And
Good point. Right. I love that. But I'm trying to understand, okay, and this is where I'm missing it. Help me out. Maybe, Peter, I'll ask you, and you can swing it to one of the ladies if you want.
Sure.
Okay, let's use Yakima, your district, near Yakima, West Valley School District, okay? Somehow, and we've talked about this before, but not everybody listened to those shows, somehow you have to reach those parents, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then somehow, and it's magic, okay? I really mean that. People like Maria there, they I don't know how they get the energy and the vibe to get this done. They have to find the parents. Then they have to show the parents, many of them from different cultures, and it could be multicultural, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How to engage their children, if I may, so that these kids start to be ready for the pre-K-12 experience. Okay, that you and every and Christie's district and Bellingham, that everybody's going to provide. Okay, how, pardon my French, how the hell do we do that, Peter?
Well, Larry, we have a home visiting program. It's based on the Parent-Child Plus model, and that's where our home visitors, you know, we use word of mouth, we have advertising, we find the families that are out in our community with young children that are, you know, preschool age, and then we go out and do home visiting and bring them books and educational toys and model, you know, like Christy said, we work with the children, but also the families. So we teach the families how to do that serve and return interaction with the child and, you know, build those dendrites and the building big brains in prior to coming to kindergarten. And when I learned about play and learn from Maria, I was thinking, well, my goodness, we've got our preschools in West Valley run Monday through Thursday, so we got all the materials there on Fridays not being used. We got the staff with our home visitors that we could bring the families in, so we could run play and learn on Fridays with our home visiting staff, and that's what we're doing. So it really fits into that strengthening families framework where we have in West Valley, Yakima, we actually, you know, we start in the city limits, but we go all the way west up into the Cascades. There's a fire station out there in Tampico. We're beyond. We have kids that come that are, you know, up in the mountains beyond the Tampico fire station. So we invite all those families to come in, you know, the very rural area. We invite them to come to the school on Fridays and have that social interaction with other parents and other children and have fun activities where they work through the different play centers or learning stations. And then that's the part where the technical expertise comes in that Maria's been able to provide us with the developmentally appropriate practices.
Right.
And also the culturally responsive practices. You know, you've been joking about Eastern Washington, Western
yeah.
Washington, but, you know, here in Central Washington, it really, it's the shrub step ecosystem. And we got a grant from Washington STEM, and we developed culturally appropriate activities where there's this matching game with animals, but the animals are from our region. So those are like rattlesnakes and coyotes and pheasants and stuff like that. And
well, how
it's
come
a, you know,
how
fun
come the three of you are the wolves and not the rattlesnakes?
Well, coyotes are taken already. I think that's a kid's ass. Anyways, we have these culturally responsive activities to have the families come, have a social connection. And then also once we have them in the door, then we can provide many concrete support in times of need that they might
exactly.
need or match them up with additional resources. Larry, I have a great story where we have Play and Learn going on Friday, and I was over in the office, you know, down the hall was the Play and Learn group. I was in the office, and there was a parent who was bringing something for her school-age child to drop off. And I said, hey, I see you have a toddler. We have Play and Learn going on down the hall. You come on down and do Play and Learn. It'll be really fun. So she came on down with her child, and they started doing all the fun activities in the Play and Learn groups. And then we were talking to the parent, and I said, you know, hey, we do have state-funded preschool at this school as well. Is that something you might be interested in? And she's like, oh, I didn't, you know, is there a cost? I'm like, no,
yeah.
state-funded, free. And Larry, the next week we had that kid in at preschool, going to preschool every day.
Let me ask you that, Peter. That's a great anecdote. It's a wonderful story, but I have to ask this. Why didn't she know about that? Why
oh, I know.
I'm not asking you to be responsible for that, but I'm curious. Okay, all the work you do, and I think Christy will probably be able to match that story as will Maria. Okay, how come she didn't know about it? Look at all the wonderful things. Look at this amazing opportunity for her child and children to succeed. Just it's amazing that they missed it.
I'd like to answer that if I may.
Who is that?
I think
is that Maria or wait? Is that Maria or Christy?
I told them it'll be easy for people to recognize my voice.
Yeah, it is. But who was that?
This is Maria.
Hi, Maria. Go ahead.
And I think we know families don't know what they don't know. People don't know what they don't know until somebody brings an opportunity or exposes them to something that matters. Something that makes a difference. They've got to learn that this is for you. This is important. And we can't do that unless we continue to reach out through multiple avenues. And our marketing, our marketing for these opportunities are really nestled within our early learning coalitions and with our community partnerships and our services and our programs that are reaching out to those furthest from resource and that are having the roughest go at accessing things. People in rural communities really living out in on the Indian reservation. We are on a large Indian reservation. We are living in a migratory and immigrant pathway for agriculture. So children are moving about, and when they have limited resource, limited travel and cars, they have limited exposure to school systems. They have limited exposure to what is needed to survive and what is needed to be successful. That becomes incumbent upon the community, and those that are all of our children are going to be shoulder to shoulder with in kindergarten. And when you have a large percentage of your kiddos that can't fare well and they can't meet marker, mm-hmm. we have to go backwards and figure out how many opportunities we can present. And
exactly.
Play and Learn groups are just those. It's free. We bring them to the families. You know, Peter's talking about one model within a school district. The children have to go there. Some of these play groups, we take out into the community. We place them in the hearts of where these families live. So migrant housing.
Like a church, like a church or a house of worship.
Church, migrant community room, a space like what Peter's talking about. It's unused. It's unencumbered. It just needs to have a little bit of love added to it, some donated books, you know, United Way money, Kellogg Foundation money, partnership and philanthropic funds that will buy small pieces of materials to put in the hands of children and families. And that's where it begins. We partner with some of our early learning experts. Some of those dollars will buy their intellectual property to go in and model and mentor and develop language for and support parents to learn developmentally appropriate words so that they can transfer those to their kiddos, teaching them, you know, the importance of literacy and play and touching and fine and gross motor, so that over time the continued exposure will practice them for better engagement. And then those referral connections. They want trusted messengers, trusted friends, people that are doing this because they want them to succeed. And families will, they lock into that, and they will.
Yeah, they do.
They will do whatever you guide them to do, as long as you're there to love them and to love their children and to tell them that they're important and that they matter in the success of their children.
And the key word you said with all of this, okay, is trust. Okay,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, even if I just to maybe get off the subject for a second, you know, there's a lot of talk out there that there are several ethnic groups that are very untrustworthy of the COVID vaccine. Okay,
yeah.
And it's very hard, okay, to build up enough trust now after all that's going on for so many years, okay, for them to be proactive and get their COVID vaccine. Okay, and it's that is the same exact thing of what you're talking about here. If people learn to trust their schools and their education and the work that's going to happen at a very early age or with their kids when their kids are at a very early age, it's going to work out better in the long run. Okay,
and yeah, I agree,
that,
Larry.
Yeah,
you know, I was just going to say, Larry.
Go ahead.
You know, this idea that I like what Christy Cower. She's the director of the National P3 Center. She says that, you know, a lot of times we're focusing on the family and always talking about kindergarten readiness for the child.
Yeah.
But we got to make sure our schools are ready for the kindergarten students and their families.
That's a great
and make sure
point.
That our schools are family friendly and our classrooms are culturally responsive.
Wow.
And so I look at Play and Learn as
great.
A wonderful opportunity to bring families to the school before their child is even enrolled and get a sense that, hey, this is our school. This is our community school. This is our hub for the community, and I'm welcome here, and it's fun. There's fun activities to do, and my child's going to have a great time when they come to kindergarten. It's really changing the model of what it means to be a leader of a school. It's more than just the K-12 system. It's really providing a hub for the community and having families feel welcome at that school so that their kids going to have great success once they enroll.
You know, it's interesting. We always talk about kids being kindergarten ready, and you nailed that one, Peter. Okay? We have to make sure that the schools are family ready. And in this day and age, with so many with so many varied cultures and ethnic groups and however you want to say that, socioeconomic levels, etc., okay, that's a very hard thing to really swallow hard and say, this is really incumbent on us. Okay, and we got to make the changes and all that. It's really interesting. All this,
Larry. There's one thing I can throw in is that you know, it's great to have an advocate in the U.S. Senate with the Washington State Senator Patty Murray, who
was
a former preschool teacher, and she made sure that in the new authorization, the ESSA, the Title I Act, that we could use Title I money for early learning. So those home visitors that we have are partially we do the braided funding. And make sure that our priorities drive our funding. And so our home visitors are partially funded by Title I, and so we're able to use that funding to staff learning. Yeah. And by the way, this Play and Learn, it's very low cost. I mean, it's a couple hours at a time. We already have the materials. So, you know, it's just really, you got to think outside our, you know, constraints of what it means to be a school leader and make sure that our schools are family friendly and use Play and Learn as a great way to do that.
It is, and that's early family friendly.
Yeah.
Okay, not just for the kids who are already there, but you got to reach out and be ready for the kids that are coming down the pike. okay? It's a key thing, and this is really excellent. Chrissy, I want to ask you something, all right? And I'm going to, this is an obvious question, but I want you to answer it. You know, we talk about all these wonderful things, like play and learn groups, early learning. Believe me, I'm an advocate, okay? I love this kind of stuff. But when all said and done, okay, and you see this as the superintendent of a pretty large school, assistant superintendent of a pretty large school district, Bellingham, with the kids that go through, do you see a difference, okay, in the kids that have had a really good early learning versus the kids who didn't? I don't know if you can measure that, but somewhere along the line we got to be able to measure that, yeah, this is working. What are your thoughts on that, Christy? And I know they're going to be good.
Yeah, well, and I'm a former kindergarten teacher.
Dr. Dominguez.
Really,
wait a minute, you're now doctor. You're going to be Dr. Dominguez. And now that you've graduated from the University of Larry, even closer, sooner. Okay? So
yes,
I expect a high-quality answer here. Go ahead, Kristen.
Well, here you go. Yeah.
Okay.
No, as a former kindergarten teacher, you know, every year you would get a cohort of students in. And Peter's statement is one that I say all the time. It's not a child's job to be ready for school. It's our job to be ready for them. You know,
great.
And grades are really a social construct. They don't, you know, we sort children by age, but that it's a developmental continuum. And so kids came in when I would be in that class, and some of my students had had high quality early learning experiences, and they had had, you know, opportunities. Even just, I mean, I live right on the water, and I had students who had never seen the water. And then I had students who had literally never had an opportunity to play with another child prior to their kindergarten entry. So those children, you know, it's a lot to do with the education debt, but we can mitigate that much earlier by giving these experiences such as play and learn. And you talked a lot about trust. Well, trust is relational, and it's built over time. And if a family doesn't have that prior to the school system or to entering the school system, why would they trust us? What is it that we've done for marginalized communities historically? Nothing. And so it's about breaking down those barriers, building relationships early with the family. So when their child does enter, there is that level of trust. And so I think part of the complexity here is we don't have an organized network. And so communities are trying to build those early learning networks. Maria is at the front of it, doing an outstanding job, but it can't be on her alone. It can't be on a district alone. It can't be on Head Start alone. We have to come together and figure out some type of systemic way to build a network in order to provide those seamless opportunities for children. And you asked about, you know, why didn't we know about that child? Because children enter education all different ways. You know, sometimes it's through, they learn about things through their pediatrician, maybe a housing unit. And so Maria's point about going to the families, and education really needs to happen in co-design with the parents. I think historically we've done two parents, and so it's, you know, coming alongside them and asking what do they want for their child. So, yes, it makes a huge difference. And really what happens is children who have had those early learning experiences tend to not need the same amount of intervention through the school system. And children who have had them tend to, you know, sadly know how the organization or the structures work, which begins to break down barriers, allowing them to access, you know, just the different skills and content that we start approaching in kindergarten.
It's such a tough job, and it used who knew when we all got into education? It used to start with kindergarten. Okay, that's what every educator thought. Okay, for the most part, and now we know it doesn't. It starts, and Maria said it best. Maria, most of your brain develops between 0 and 5. Okay, and if we don't catch it then, okay, it's going to be all this aggravation. So. Let me ask you this, Maria, you're the expert on this, and we're talking to people all over the country. The play and learn groups are important. How do you get one started?
Well, like I said before, if you've got a space and you've got an opportunity to pull groups of family or children together where they already are, and you know, the types of groups we're talking about are structured. They're a little bit more specifically guided, so that those learning and those practices happen, so that they get into a good transitional kindergarten a lot better. And we're practicing these grown-ups. So really what we have done is we have just, you know, like Peter said, we look for things that already are, you know, either needing to be reappropriated or, you know, spaces that are not being loved right now, toys that are not being used that are tax dollar funded. I go out and I just talk to partners and community partners, and somebody will give me $2,000 to buy some children's books, and I hand those books
that
to parents.
Amazing.
Then we bring them together and we say, here, play with some Play-Doh. Here, let's pull these donated things from, you know, other places. But, you know, United Way, your local philanthropic groups, you know, public funders, we've got some great, great philanthropy systems around early learning that want to put materials in a space so that children can be exposed. And the other pieces I wanted to make sure that we don't miss on is that families need to come together so they can learn about stability and wellness and basic needs meeting and referrals for help, for healthy outcomes. So kids can't learn if they're not healthy. Parents can't bring or try to educate if they don't feel safe and strong. And so all of those trusted groups are typically groups of like community members where they feel safe. And then we start to talk about bringing the family voice and the family culture and the diversity and the differently abled exposure and the family dynamic exposure, so people feel like they are part of this unique, very home-created space for them. So we start with the basics, the five learning areas: arts and crafts, manipulative, dramatic play, you know, block play, you know, the basic building structures that you would want to really start to expose children to. And then we just start adding and adding as more money comes. And then it becomes the space of that group, of that community, of that culture, and that language. And so the environment becomes a consistent weekly opportunity for families to go there and communicate and develop relationship amongst each other, for children to practice play together, for an adult to learn new language and new behavior skills, and also for opportunity for early intervention you know, to bridge families that are with children that are struggling in learning domains. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's an idea. We've got to go in just a minute. One second, Peter. It's such a good idea. Is if only there were a place where everybody could take the, you know, kids grow out of children's books. And if a lot of people just toss them. They just toss them. Okay? And obviously, if we could just find a place in every community, we could just throw them into a bin. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then use them for this type of thing. It's such a good recycling bit. Peter, we got about a minute. Go ahead.
Oh, just real quick. You know, Maria's very humble, too, because success breeds success. We had an opportunity where some Kellogg Foundation money came to the region. Maria made her pitch, and we had a pilot project where they did a play and learn group at the community service office, like the welfare office. And they said it was so wonderful because the children were more calm. They had something to do while they were waiting, while the parents were waiting for the appointment. And so that's now been replicated all throughout Washington State, all based on the work that Maria did. And then she just told me recently that she got a Creative Kids grant for $500,000 per year over the next 10 years to serve migrant students all throughout Central Washington. So lots of good things happen. Success breeds success. The other thing I was going to say was networks are important. We have a regional network where we're having our education world meet with the health and wellness, and so we can spread the word, like you were saying, to families so they know about these opportunities. And then national networks are important for our own learning. You know, I'm a part of this AASA early learning cohort.
You are.
And you were asking about the impact on student learning. They did a case study for West Valley, and there's the statistics in there that the kids that had early learning experiences, their learning was off the charts compared to the children that were on free and reduced lunch. So this was it was over 25% meeting standard more than the kids that didn't have that. So, you know, it's just really making an impact on positive impact on student learning, and of course making our schools, like we said before, family friendly, so that parents have a good experience with that school and they want their kids to be there. And you know, it's just going to help things all around.
Have a good experience from the beginning. Thank you, Peter. Christy, Maria, thank you. You're both wonderful. You're going to heaven.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have
I don't,
a great
I don't
day.
Know about Peter. He's okay, but I know Christy and Marie are. All right? I know that for a fact. Okay, Dad. Nah, just kidding. Hey, thank you all. We do got to go, so I will talk to you all. This was great. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Larry.
Oh, thank you.
Have a
Bye-bye.
Great day. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Christy, and thank you, Maria. Thank you, Peter, as always. Okay. Peter, again, is at West Valley Schools in near Yakima, Washington, or in, and Christy's at Bellingham School District, where Maria's at the Early Learning Child Care, no, Child Care Aware of Central Washington, Yakima. You can find them and ask them. Okay, good stuff. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.